A very warm welcome to Consuming Issues. I'm Georgie Frost, here with you every weekday from 9 until 1 on Share Radio, on digital, online and through the Share Radio mobile app, making the pound in your pocket go a little bit further. The team from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of the Mail Online, back in the studio for our weekly catch-up. Today I'm joined by Rachel Rickard-Strauss and by Lee Boyce. And coming up, extra flights being put on today to bring British holidaymakers back from Tunisia. The Foreign Office is now warning against all but essential travel to the country and says another terrorist attack is highly likely.
We have not taken this decision lightly, but our first priority will always be the safety of our citizens.
Major tour operators have cancelled all holidays to Tunisia until November.
The way the law works is essentially for people who are out there at the moment, they'll be brought back home. For people who are due to travel, they will either be offered an alternative equivalent holiday or they will be offered a full refund.
We'll have all the advice if you are affected. Also coming up today.
It's a budget that recognises the hard work and the sacrifice of the British people over the past 5 years and says we will not put that at risk.
As the dust settles on George Osborne's budget, what does it mean for the pound in your pocket? The team will do a whistle-top tour of the key points. What you may not have noticed, unless you reached page 94 of the budget, because it wasn't in the actual speech, was a move to allow HMRC to dip into our current accounts and our savings held in cash ISAs to recover tax debts. We'll have more on this. Plus today, could energy bills be set to fall after the competition watchdog says we're being overcharged to the tune of as much as £160 a year? Banks are competing to lead the way on fixed-rate savings accounts, and why moving just a few streets could hike your car insurance. And
I do not believe!
Yes, I do not believe it. Find out where has been revealed as the road rage capital of Britain, and 69-year-old Victor Meldrews are apparently the biggest culprits. Plus, we're asking today, as Kim Kardashian's Madame Tussauds statue has been unveiled, I kid you not, she has a statue at Madame Tussauds, and yes, she's posing for a selfie. Two things in one space that would definitely go into my room 101, the torture room, if you didn't know, from the novel 1984, reputedly containing the worst things in the world. So I'm asking quite simply, what goes into room 101 for you? And the catch is, I get to decide if it goes in. A very good morning, Lee Boyce. A very good morning, Rachel Rickard-Strauss. Let's start with you, Rachel. What goes into your room 101?
EE. I'm seething with EE at the moment. I went to visit a friend of mine who's in his mid-late 70s, and he had a new tablet from EE, an iPhone 6, and a new router that he hadn't managed to put together properly. He uses his phone, his handset, to make phone calls. He does not use the internet on it. He does not need any of this stuff. He doesn't really know what a tablet is necessarily. And yet he's got all of this stuff. And I can just imagine him going into the EE store. They give him the talk. He comes home with all of this stuff. And I see it again and again with him and with readers that they get exploited because they get given the talk.
I'm going to allow that, Rachel, because I'm an EE customer and get phone calls all the time wanting to sell this stuff to me, even though I say, please take me off your list. Don't call me. I'm not interested. If I am, I'll find out for myself. So well done. It goes in. Lee?
Can I just say, morning, George, mate. Can I just say, when you first said that, I thought you were going to say E.T. And I was going to get really upset then. You kind of went E.E. E.E.
phone E.T. home. Would not be allowed, but it's all right, Lee.
And you wouldn't be able to phone home because E.E.'s signal's so bad. Yeah, sorry.
Anyway,
I'm going to give you two things, room 101.
Okay.
Firstly, TV show The Only Way Is Essex.
Yep, that goes in.
It's just got to be binned.
You don't have to explain it.
Second one, micro scooters. Just people have their kids on these little micro scooters. I'll be walking, especially Kensington, London, you know, various bits, and they just go right into my shins. Micro scooters all the time, into my shins. Kids are just wayward in them. If there's road rage story that we're doing later, I'm having pavement rage with micro scooters at the moment.
Conspiracy theory. Do you know what? I've not seen them around. So they're not going in for me because I'm not bothered by them. And also the fact they're going into your knees, that just makes me laugh. Annie!
Oh, you're such a hard taskmaster today, honestly. Okay, so far we've got selfie sticks, Kim Kardashian, obviously, wasps. Mm-hmm. I put them in because they're so irritating and so unnecessary. So Gareth has gone for plastic bags.
No, I didn't allow those.
People who don't let you on or off the tube.
Yeah, they're in.
Okay, unkind people.
Yep, they're in.
Rich has gone for broccoli.
No.
Oh my goodness.
Broccoli stays out.
Paul like says middle lane drivers can go in.
Yeah,
they're right in. And this for me, I back you all the way on this one, Jerry. Liqueur filled chocolates.
No, Rachel.
Rachel, how
no,
are you?
No, but I like those fondant ones, which no one else likes. So you can, and they're always left at the end. The lovely strawberry and raspberry ones.
I'm with you on that one. I agree. No, they're not in.
Oh no. Okay, well, do keep them coming in. Let us know what you would stick in room 101. You can tweet us at Share Radio UK, email us consumingissues@shareradio.co.uk, or text 66777. Just start your text with the word Share.
Thank you very much, Annie.
To celebrate Share Radio's first year, we're giving away a Pure Evoke D2 digital radio every single week. Many lucky winners have already received theirs, and you could be next. To enter, visit shareradio.co.uk, register your details, and you'll be entered into the weekly draw. Open to UK residents over the age of 16. Visit our website for full terms and conditions. Share Radio, sharing ideas about money.
A very warm welcome. I'm Georgie Francis. Is Share Radio journalist Rachel Rickard-Strauss and Lee Boyce from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of the Mail Online. Join me live in the studio for our weekly catch-up. And coming up, we'll be taking a look at who are the winners and who are the losers from the Chancellor's summer budget. But first, thousands of British holidaymakers being flown home from Tunisia after the government has urged them to leave. The Foreign Office says another terror attack there is highly likely and Britain should avoid all but essential travel to the country. Foreign Secretary Philip Hammond says changes have been made in Tunisia since the shooting, but the extra measures just don't go far enough.
We have now completed an assessment of the security measures in tourist areas. And while we are working with the Tunisian authorities to further strengthen those measures, we judge that more work is needed to effectively protect tourists from the terrorist threat.
Well, major tour operators have cancelled all holidays to Tunisia this summer, and holiday companies, airlines and travel agents have been busy issuing guidance for tourists. Victoria Bacon from the UK Travel Association, ABTA, says there's about 3,000 British nationals in Tunisia on package holidays at the moment.
There will also be some people who are travelling independently, so it's important that you contact your airline as well. It's slightly more complicated if you're travelling independently, clearly, than if you're on a package holiday when you will be brought back home, basically.
So where does this leave holidaymakers in Tunisia and those who've booked already to visit the country? Well, Rachel Lee, what do you make about this warning from the Foreign Office?
It doesn't have to be the end of your summer holiday if you're planning to travel to Tunisia. You can make other arrangements. If you get in touch with your tour operator, if that's who you've booked through, they should be able to move you to an alternative holiday, or if not, you should get a refund.
How have the airlines and tour operators been responding? I was saying they're cancelling all holidays to Tunisia this summer and laying on extra flights to bring people home.
Oh, it looks like everything's going all right so far. I mean, the spotlight is on them, particularly, Thomas Cook at the moment has to be doing everything right and be seen to be doing everything right. If you're with a tour operator, it is often easier than if you have booked things separately in terms of getting a refund and being looked after. And actually, there are, in the long term, we're seeing an increasing popularity of package holidays, even though it's so simple to just book your own flight and to book your own accommodation. But that kind of extra reassurance that you get, particularly in these uncertain times, people like the reassurance that they'll be looked after.
I mean, this is terrible for the Tunisian tourist industry, isn't it, Lee?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a shame because obviously the actions of one person is going to decimate the whole tourism industry in Tunisia. I'm going to guess that, you know, British people going there are amongst the highest, nationalities of tourists that will go there.
I've heard normally about this time of year, about 20,000.
So that shows there's 3,000 there now and there's going to be zero until the end of October. It could result in hotels closing down there. Thousands of jobs are going to be lost. Mm. And it's a real shame. But obviously, you know, safety of our citizens comes first. So the Foreign Office has put this out, you know, 2 weeks on from the tragedy, obviously. And the advice has to be sort of taken. And, you know, people that have got package holidays booked there until the end of October, they're either going to end up getting a refund or flown somewhere else, you know, a holiday, sort of a like-for-like holiday somewhere else. So it's not going to be the end of your summer holiday if you have booked it. you know, from here to end of October. But as I say, it's all about the safety of British citizens.
And are you covered with all of these things by insurance?
Not if you go any longer. Mm. But if you've bought insurance, generally you are covered. If the Foreign Office hasn't issued guidance not to go to a place, the chances are that you'll be covered if something goes wrong or if you have to cancel. But if you went from now, the Foreign Office having issued this warning, then you wouldn't have any cover at all.
Obviously, it's a lot simpler for those going on package holidays. What about independent travellers?
You just have to phone up and speak to whoever it is you booked with. Whoever you booked your flight with, they should be able to help you perhaps delay your flights. You wouldn't necessarily be eligible for compensation, but they may give you a refund. And the same with your hotel. But I if you have booked directly to a hotel in Tunisia, I really feel for them. Mm. You know, not only are they going to not have business, but to be issuing refunds at this time.
Well, let's turn our attention away from Tunisia. Coming up, could energy bills be set to fall after the competition watchdog says we're being overcharged to the tune of as much as £160 a year? But first, the Chancellor says his budget is setting the UK on a path to a lower tax, lower welfare society. George Osborne told the MPs that the economy is fundamentally stronger than it was 5 years ago. He also said that independent predictions estimated that Britain will have the strongest economic growth of any major advanced economy in the world this year, and says that the budget is the right way forward.
It's a budget that recognises the hard work and the sacrifice of the British people over the past 5 years, and says we will not put that at risk. We have a job to do and we're here to get on with it. This will be a budget for working people.
Yeah. So it was the first fully Conservative budget in 19 years. Mr Osborne opted to help the lowest paid while also providing a boost for young workers, middle earners and the self-employed. However, families reliant on working tax credits will see the benefit frozen for 4 years as he seeks to slash welfare spending. So who are the winners? Who are the losers? This is Money's James Slack has done all the legwork for us in the next article. Let's start with the winners then, shall we, Rachel and Lee?
Yeah, so one of the big winners is lowest paid. So people that are on minimum wage, over 25s, my ad, are going to see their minimum wage go from £6.50 to a £9 living wage. They say that's going to deliver more than £5,000 a year extra for a full-time worker. And 6 million salaries will be increased. But of course, when he gives with one hand, he does take with the other. So some of this is going to be offset with tax credit cuts. But there will be the threshold where people start paying tax is going to increase from £10,600 to £11,000. So people over 25, obviously, on those sort of lower paid jobs should notice a big difference in their salaries. So they're one of the biggest winners.
Rachel?
Yeah, it just depends on this kind of balancing act between what you gain in the increase in the living wage and what you lose in tax credits. There are some people who will see over a grand knocked off their income potentially. You know, the lowest paid people, that's a massive amount of money.
The Institute for Fiscal Studies calculating the impact of the measures announced by the Chancellor, suggesting that 13 million UK families will lose an average of £260 a year due to a freeze on tax credits. Also predicting 3 million families will lose £1,000 a year on average from cuts to universal credit.
You know, some of these are going to hit families hard. But as he keeps saying in the budget, our deficit is massive and something has to be done to cut down on this. So, you know, the list of losers is quite high. I mean, there's all sorts of nasty little tidbits of information in that budget that we could talk about probably all day. But I think one of the big ones is about parents not being able to claim tax credits for more than two children.
We had some interesting comments we had a live blog throughout the budget and people saying, how do you calculate two children? One person commented that their partner already had two children, but she wanted to have children with him. And where do you start counting? And I'm sure he's worked all of this out, but it's interesting in an age of such diverse types of family unit, how you measure two children.
What if you have triplets?
Oh, that's a good point.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I'm sure they'll be poring over all these details as we speak.
I also wonder, at this time of an ageing population, when we're cutting down on immigration, I just think we need as many children as we can get. I'm thinking, rather selfishly, I would like there to be a huge bulk of younger people than I who can afford to pay my pension. And if we're discouraging people to have more than two children, and we're not letting in migrants either who are economically active, I'm concerned.
Which leads us on to nicely, some of the measures introduced for younger people haven't gone down too well.
Well, the big one, I guess, again, is the student. Maintenance grants now are going to be turned into loans rather than, you know, a grant that you wouldn't pay back. And, you know, grant's a grant. But it's been a very unpopular move. You know, the Conservative government isn't particularly popular with students anyway in the way that it's risen tuition fees to £9,000. So already going to university is a very expensive endeavour for many. And this is going to put kids off that aren't from a very, you know, privileged background into going to university. It's just another burden that they're going to have to face. I think it's when they start earning over £21,000 in the future, they'll be paying back not only their tuition fee loans, but that grant was a big boon for students. And I think it is a real shame that we seem to be turning kids off from university. So that was quite a big change.
Plus, he's got rid of the £9,000 cap on tuition fees. And I know that we're supposed to say, well, we see it as a tax and you only have to start paying it after a certain amount of time and it just comes out of your income. But however much you can kind of justify it theoretically, just to imagine that after 3 years of doing a degree, you know, I'm thinking particularly people like me, art students, you hope that you get value out of them, but goodness knows, to think that you're coming out with £45,000 of debt, however rationally you can justify that, that must be enough to put some people off.
I imagine it will. Also, some of the measures, under 21s not entitled to housing benefit. Of course, that living wage won't apply to people under 25.
It seems to have hit younger people quite hard. And then you start looking back and thinking about other measures that he's made outside of the budget, such as pensioner bonds. I know we've spoken about these comprehensively this year, but let's face it, that was an over 65 little perk of decent rates to save. What was the incentive for younger people to save? And I think a lot of people will look at some of these measures and say, well, you know, it's very, very important that our next generation are going to be armed with the correct sort of knowledge and expertise to take skilled jobs, to fill our NHS. I do slightly worry from some of the measures that he's put in here. I mean, he's talking about creating 3 million more apprenticeships. So it seems like the Conservative government seems much more keen on people to get out there working, doing apprenticeships rather than going to university and perhaps studying for degrees that they don't see as vital.
He'll be talking today more about something that he mentioned briefly in the budget, this productivity puzzle. One of the key components of that is that we have a workforce that is trained up and is knowledgeable and has access to the right sorts of training in the long term for the types of jobs that we're going to need as we move into all different types of different industries. It seems so crucial at this point to encourage people. And it's true also that the under 25s won't benefit from this living wage. But then on the other hand, you wonder, well, will they then become more desirable from employers because you don't have to pay them as much? Interesting, I read another blog yesterday making the same point that this therefore was a good budget for hardworking Poles because who typically don't claim tax credits or welfare of any sort but will benefit from this new living wage thing, particularly immigrants coming into work tend to be younger. You're going to have a higher proportion of immigrants coming into work, low-paid workers who are under 25, who are therefore more desirable for British employers.
One thing I will ask you is, because we do speak about it a lot here on Share Radio and on This Is Money, buy-to-let landlords, that measure that was introduced. Rachel, you want to get on the housing ladder. It's supposed to be a boost for first-time buyers, with, of course, buy-to-let landlords' profits being slashed in a crackdown, they say, on mortgage interest tax relief. Is this how it will pan out?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a massive incentive that buy-to-let landlords have had for some time. And there's been a big argument about it in the last few months as there was rumours that this was going to be cut altogether. So what it is higher rate taxpayers who typically will have investment properties and a buy-to-let portfolio. They might have a portfolio of many homes, might just have one home. They're able to claim the mortgage interest. So it helps them sort of, you know, make a fairly tidy profit. Now, if you're a higher tax rate payer, you're not going to be able to do this at your rate of tax anymore. It's going to be at a basic tax level of 20%. And that's quite a massive deal, especially if you have got a number of homes, because it's going to eat into your profits. I mean, there's an estimation that the relief actually costs the Treasury £6.3 billion every year. I mean, that is a substantial amount of money. So what could happen, and what experts are arguing, is that landlords might start hiking rents. It doesn't happen until April 2017, so I don't think it's going to be anything that's immediate. But from that point onwards, we could be seeing rents. They're already going up anyway. This could be another sort of nail in the coffin to renters who are saving up for a first-time home. But at the same time, it could take a bit of the sting out of the property market at the moment, because there's a lot of first-time buyers who are battling, you know, potential buy-to-let landlords for homes. If you've got that sort of in place as a buy-to-let, you know, you could be a cash buyer. It could be all sorts of ways that you're more attractive to a seller, first-time buyer. But it's all very interesting measures. I tried to find out how many buy-to-let landlords are in the higher tax bracket, because that's really important to find out. Really struggling to get the figures on that. So I'll report next week if I can get that.
We look forward to that. So Rachel, I understand you're looking for a home at the moment.
I'm certainly not yet at the stage where I'm worried about being a property mogul and the rental yields that I might receive. But I think it's just such a crafty move by the Chancellor. We've been writing a lot of sort of previews on will he, won't he, what will he do with buy-to-let. The Bank of England has been talking for some time now in its financial stability reports that it's worried about buy-to-let. And while it has the powers now to regulate the owner-occupier market, it hasn't had the powers to regulate buy-to-let, and it's sort of been hinting that it has wanted to be able to do something. The problem is, as rates start to rise, then the margin between the rental yields that landlords receive and the mortgage payments that they give out is going to close up. And as that starts to happen, it becomes less economically viable for them. They'll start to sell off. And then once they start to sell off, then we could potentially see a huge fall in prices. So the Bank of England has been very worried. Osborne, instead of giving over more powers, has just gone in himself and done this thing, which I did not see this forecast or preempted by anyone. So many of us were talking about what he might do to kind of cool down the buy-to-let market. No one talked about going after this 40% tax rather than the 20%.
Well, before we put the budget completely to bed, one story not so widely reported, except by you, I believe, Lee, on page 94 of the budget, stating that HMRC will be able to dip into our current accounts and savings held in cash ISAs so the government can recover tax debts. Now, this is from the autumn. Lee, they say the devil's in the detail. What did you really get to page 94? Congratulations.
Yeah, well, look,
what did you find on page 94?
Well, this has been spoken about before. I mean, it's not anything new. It was sort of muted in the budget last year, and they were talking about handing these powers over to the tax man, which essentially means it can dip into your current account, it could dip into your savings if you owe it tax. Now, our readers absolutely hate this. I mean, they hate it with a passion, because it's very Big Brother, going on the Room 101 theme. They feel it's very Big Brother. And of course, the HMRC isn't exactly known for being completely accurate all the time. You know, it makes errors. And if it makes an error, it could be quite difficult to sort out. But the one thing I will say about this is, previously, when they talked about it, they were just going to go straight in and take the money, and then there'd be an appeal process. Now what they're saying they're going to do is that before any money's taken out, there's going to be all sorts of safeguards, which includes a county court appeal process and a face-to-face visit to every debtor before they're considered through having their money taken out in this way. It will be for amounts over £1,000. Mm-hmm. So if you owe the taxman more than a grand. And it also says that it won't take the money out if you're going to have less than £5,000 left in either your ISA or your bank account. So it's going to not affect loads of people. They reckon about 17,000 people a year would be affected by this. And a lot of the comments were saying, you know, all it's going to do is make people put money under their mattress, you know, bank accounts aren't safe anymore. Or, you know, a lot of people that owe tax maybe don't have UK current accounts, because it's only for UK accounts. It's not for anything overseas. So there's a lot of stuff to iron out in this. And I'd be very interested to see when this legislation happens. They've confirmed to me that it's going to be from the autumn, so I'm sure there's going to be a lot more information about it. But I think it's very, very important that the government makes it clear to people that bank accounts are safe and are still a safe place to keep their money, because we don't want to start seeing people withdrawing cash and really putting it under their mattress.
Now, boys, you're hearing Lee Boyce from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of the Mail Online. Also in the studio, Rachel Rickard-Strauss.
Morning Money. The markets, the papers, and the city. Today's Need to Know on Share Radio.
Every morning from 6 to 9, tune in to Morning Money on Share Radio.
With Sandra Kilhoff and Mark Johnson.
An in-depth look at the UK and global markets and business.
Giving you all the day's need to know.
Morning Money.
Getting you ready for the day ahead.
A very warm welcome to Consuming Issues. I'm Georgie Frost, here with you every weekday from 9 until 1, making the pound in your pocket go a little bit further. Journalists Rachel Rickard-Strauss, Lee Boyce from This Is Money are in the studio with me. Coming up, more doom and gloom for desperate young home seekers, it seems, as new figures show house prices and rental costs are set to soar. But first, millions of us could see our energy bills slashed after it's emerged that the Big Six have been overcharging loyal customers by as much as £160 a year. That's according to the latest findings from the Competition and Markets Authority, who say that the tariffs from the Big Six energy companies were around 6% higher than they should have been between 2009 and 2013. Well, earlier I spoke to Juliet Davenport, the chief executive of Good Energy, to get her reaction to the report.
So I think a lot of the key aspects of what's come out of the CMA are not unexpected, to be honest. I mean, it's been fairly obvious if you've been looking at the energy markets over the last couple of years that we've seen very high tariffs and very low tariffs from the same companies. So customers who have tended to be more loyal being charged higher prices, and customers when energy companies have been trying to bring on new customers giving them very low prices. So that kind of big differential between the two. So we think it's great that that's the data is there now and people can actually start to analyse that and come up with the resolution around that. And then the whole piece around the regulation of this market. I think we've seen very well-intended regulation to try and put the customer back at the centre of this marketplace. But actually, it's been over-complex and they've overthought it and made it too difficult. And actually, we need to step back now and really look at, rather than being very specific, much more themes-led type regulation.
Well, that was Juliet Davenport, Chief Executive of Good Energy, getting her reaction to the Competition and Markets Authority report. So, Rachel, remind us why this investigation has been taking place. Seems a familiar story with the Big Six energy companies. What came out of it?
Well, everyone has been worried for a long time that the market is broken, that it doesn't work in the interests of consumers. Trust in energy companies has been at an all-time low. So this was like the let's find out definitively what actually is going on. It's a huge, wide-ranging report. And they spoke to everyone in the industry and came up with what we all knew, which was that people are being ripped off by their energy suppliers if they don't shop around to get a better deal. The people who are least likely to shop around to get a better deal are arguably those who can least afford to pay extra. People who perhaps don't have internet access, older people, people on lower incomes. And so then one idea that came out of this was, well, how do we protect these people if they're just being overcharged by energy suppliers? Perhaps we should introduce some kind of cap. But this is not a very conservative concept. And it seems already that Cameron is kind of distancing himself from that idea. But something has to be done because we all, I mean, energy is the same thing. We turn on the tap, we turn on the shower, whatever, turn on the heating. We're all getting the same thing. Why should it be that it costs one person more than someone else to have a shower or turn on the kettle? So something has to be done.
And so what are they recommending? Because they haven't recommended that the Big Six should be broken up.
No, well, this was the other thing that people were worried about, was that energy suppliers are these massive bodies that generate electricity, sell electricity, and sometimes they generate electricity and sell it to themselves, and it all gets very convoluted. If you ever try to read the financial reports of one of the Big Six, I mean, it's just completely mind-boggling. No one can get their heads around it. And with that kind of confusion, there was a concern that it created a kind of opacity that made it difficult to know whether they're doing the right thing or not. The CMA forced the Big Six to explain their numbers and to give enough numbers to work out whether or not this generating and selling energy to themselves and to each other was working in the interests of consumers. They decided it was.
And no tacit coordination as well between the Big Six in terms of raising or lowering prices.
Which is sort of feels quite counterintuitive, because what we've seen every year is that one of the Big Six will, just before the weather starts to turn, will put up their prices. And then within 2 weeks, all of them will have done it. And that, for some people, felt like too much of a coincidence. But apparently, was a coincidence, says the CMA, because they were not discussing among themselves when they were going to drop prices and by how much.
Also to come in for criticism, Ofgem as well.
So they have been meddling away over the last couple of years to fix things for consumers. The regulator Ofgem, to make things more transparent. What they decided to do was to limit the number of tariffs that each supplier could offer to their customers to 4. And so that means it should be much easier to compare one with another. But with that, all sorts of things were sort of thrown out at the same time. You used to be able to get green tariffs. They went. You used to, if you were an older customer over 65, you might get some sort of reduced tariff, which was also very beneficial. You used to be able to get tariffs if you paid on time. You'd get a small reduction. All of that went because they're only allowed to give 4 tariffs. And of course, they could have kept the green tariffs and they could have kept those for older customers. But of course, they didn't. They keep the ones that are most popular with their customers. And
understandably.
And well, quite. But and the CMA has argued that by doing this, they actually have made things less competitive. And this will become increasingly important over the next 5 years towards 2020, when everyone will have smart meters. Soon we'll be able to have much more kind of nimble tariffs, whereby you can get a lower tariff if you agree to buy your energy, use more energy at certain times of day when there's less demand, things like that. And in order to be able to get the benefit out of that, you really need more than 4 tariffs.
Now, the energy watchdog Ofgem welcomed the findings. They said we'll work with them to develop and implement their final remedies where they fall within our jurisdiction to deliver a more competitive market for consumers. Particular bugbear of yours, isn't it, Rachel? You've actually written an article there. Ofgem's meddling put an end to green energy tariffs, and I hope it gets thoroughly told off for it, you say.
It didn't as much as some people thought. I mean, a lot of people think that there's just not a place for Ofgem at the moment. And if there was this level misconduct is probably strong. But if there's all of this going on under the watch of Ofgem, what was it doing and why has it made things worse? So it did get a bit of a telling off, but I think it's come up quite lightly.
We heard earlier there from Juliet Davenport, one of the challenger firms, Good Energy, that are also rather green. A challenger provider, how trustworthy are they? Because I guess we're not naturally a nation of switchers. This report has found that out. Perhaps a lot of that might be to do with the fact, do people quite trust challenger firms yet?
No, but most of them are top of the market and offer some of the best customer service. They are new, so they have to prove themselves. They're not complacent. I'm just looking at on thisismoney.co.uk, we have a list of the top deals available. You can get 869 is the best one at the moment from GB Energy Supply. We've actually got a special rate going on at the moment where you can join up with other people to get a better deal. First Utility, Flow Energy, all of these. OVO is near the top. You really have to scroll down to number 10 to get to one of the big 6. Mm. And I mean, energy is energy is energy, you know? There's no difference one from the other. I mean, I suppose the only distinguishing factor might be the level of customer service. But in general, a lot of the smaller suppliers come up better.
Well, you did mention there your latest collective switch tariff. Explain about that.
So what we do is we use sort of the power of numbers to get a better deal for customers. So
everyone joins together and you bargain, basically, for a good deal.
So if you've got, say, 10,000 people who say, right, we want to buy energy, give us a good deal, you can haggle among the suppliers and end up with, I mean, 869 is most of the big 6, you can't get anything for under a grand, so that's phenomenal.
I have to know then, as a result of this Competition Markets Authority, it's still ongoing, we should point out. Consultation period, I believe, should take about 6 months. Are we going to see our bills fall? Or is the onus on us to switch?
I think that's the only way that we can reliably see things change. And we have to switch, but also if you know anyone who hasn't, parents, neighbours, anyone who hasn't, perhaps people who might not have internet access, might not be quite so comfortable using a price comparison website, check that they have as well.
Spread the word, indeed.
I actually helped my mum. So my mum had never switched energy. She kept moaning that, you know, it was going up and up and up. took her to This Is Money for our little tool. Not that, you know, I have to obviously plug our own products, but this one is a particularly good tool. And she was surprised, actually, at how simple it was. You tap in your details, what tariff you're on currently, which you can find usually at the top of your statement from your current energy provider, put that into this box, and it will just say which one's going to save you the most amount of money. And it also has sort of a star rating, so you can see if people are recommending it. There's a few that maybe haven't got the customer service quite right yet, so the rating's not that great. But yeah, Mum switched. I can't remember, don't ask me who it was that she switched to, but it's all gone through pretty smoothly. So it is quite an easy process. And actually, this data actually shows that 34% of people haven't switched ever. If we can get that number down a little bit, people might start getting a slightly better deal.
Indeed, spread the word. Lee, I'm going to stick with you, actually. An article that you've written, Summer Battle to Top Fixed Rate Savings Tables, heats up with the second Best Buy boost from Challenger Bank in under a week. What's all this about, Lee?
Oh, it's got so exciting in the savings world. I've gone months, it's been barren. It's a tumbleweed. It's just been sort of like flowing through our Best Buy tables because nothing's been happening. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, there's been a real sort of glut of Challenger banks that, you know, some of...
Challengers again,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, Challengers. And actually, people seem to be much more sort of trusting with these Challenger banks, I guess because they've been around for a few years now. There's, you know, sort of Metro Banks, Aldermore, Shawbrook, and they're taking in people's cash and they're giving a fixed rate return. Mm-hmm. I'll say it's mainly fixed rates that are going up at the moment. So Charter Savings Bank, which launched earlier on this year, has launched a one-year fix at 2.06%. So it's pretty good, really, considering the lows that we've seen in the last 12 months.
Give us some context around that figure. Say lows that we've seen.
So I actually spoke to James Blower, who used to be head of savings at Shawbrook Bank. So he's very much in the industry. He knows how it works. And he said at the start of May, there were only four banks that were paying above 1.75% on one-year fix. So that shows you that 2.06 in the space of, you know, 6 weeks has gone up and up and up, because one challenger will go to the top of the chart and then another challenger will go to the top of the chart, because what they want is savers cash to then lend out. Because they've started from pretty much zero, you know, they've wanted to get money in as quickly as possible. He says that Charter Bank has had £500 million going in 3 months.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's pretty fast growth. And hopefully what will happen is that more banks will get their licences. We spoke about Atom Bank a couple of weeks ago.
They are covered, aren't they? They're covered, by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme.
This is the other thing I was going to say. The other bit of exciting savings news that's happened in the last week or so was the limit. So the Financial Services Compensation Scheme, currently £85,000. Now, because the pound has strengthened against the euro, our limits are going to go down to £75,000 from January, because we have to, the Bank of England has to, every 5 years, look at that savings protection limit and put it against €100,000. So we have to have the equivalent. Now, this has caused a bit of a stir because, you know, a lot of people will have quite large sums of money. I'm not going to say there's loads and loads of people. Yeah. It still affects quite a few people that want to make sure they're covered. You know, we don't want to go back to those days of those Icelandic banks, for example. It was a complete pain trying to get money back from those banks. So a lot of people have it in the forefront of their mind now. The Bank of England went on a massive drive a couple of years ago to make FSCS compensation limits a thing that everyone knew about. You know, banks had to put their limits in the window. So this, every bank now has a sticker outside that says, you know, we're FSCS protected. Now, these challenger banks, on the whole, are protected under FSCS. You can check out a list of all the ones that are on our website. Sometimes it doesn't really happen with challenger banks, but with some bigger banks, they might share a license. Mm-hmm. You're only covered once. So something like Lloyds and Halifax, for example, there's a few, and AA, I think, come under it, and BM Savings. You only get protected once because they share a banking license. And from January, it's going to be £75,000. So people need to be quite aware of that. But going back to the battle where we were at, what could happen with something like Atom, which all these, as I say, are protected, if it launches the savings rate in a couple of months' time, which is getting itself together, because it's going to want to pull money in, and savings are how you pull money in, it might want to nudge to the top of the 12-month fix. It wants to get that cash in. But then another challenge bank wants a bit at the top. And it's that what we've been missing in the last couple of years. It's just gone, rates have just gone blah, 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 down, down, down.
How long do you think it'll keep going up, up, up?
Well, it's the thing. I don't think it's going to be a particularly fast process. I don't think we're going to be looking at, you know, 3% anytime soon. But I reckon, you know, by sort of the end of the year, we could be looking at sort of a 2.2, 2.25%. You never know. It all depends on how many more challenger banks come out. And actually, there seems to be quite a few in the pipeline.
It's something the government's trying to promote, certainly.
Trying
at the
to
moment.
Promote, yeah. So, we're talking about sort of 20, 30 banks that are going through trying to get a license at the moment. So, that could only mean more stimulus in the fixed rate savings market. And banks aren't stepping up to the plate. They're not after savers' cash at the moment. They've had funding for lending to tap into, which has enabled them to get cheap funding without having to tap into savers, which is a big reason why rates have fallen.
I mean, it's just whether you would do it into a 12-month, for example, or 5-year. You've also got a 5-year table, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, we've got a 5-year table, but they're not as popular because it's so hard to know what's going to happen in the next 5 years, and you don't really fix yourself. The Best Buy 5-year fix also comes with Charter, and it's 3.06%. So you're getting an extra 1% on your money, but you're fixing for, you know, five times the length. So what will happen between now and 2020 is anyone's guess. It's such a long-term thing to think about, and I don't think it's attractive enough for people to put their money away for that length of time at the moment.
No one ever anticipated that interest rates would be this low, the base rate would be this low for that long, and it's been since March 2009, hasn't it?
Yeah.
With hindsight, perhaps it would have made sense.
Oh, 5 years ago, you could have probably fixed for, you know, 5-6%, and those sort of people would have been laughing up until now when they looked at somewhere else to house their cash. And that's the trouble.
But it's always just kicked further down the road every 6 months, or maybe, you know, now they're going to raise interest rates in 6 months, now they're going to, and it doesn't happen. But but it looks like that the tide will turn soon. And by how long have we been saying that for? But
yeah, it's like so many things, isn't it? It's like Greece, it's like interest rates. It feels like almost like Groundhog Month. When's any of this stuff, you know, going to get sorted or changed? You just don't know. You know, a lot can happen in 5 years, but as we're finding out, a lot can not happen in five
exactly.
years.
Exactly. So. You're listening to Consuming Issues.
Sharing ideas about money on London Digital and online. This is Share Radio.
Journalist Rachel Rickard-Strauss, Lee Boyce from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of the Mail Online. Join me in the studio for our weekly catch-up. Coming up, why grumpy old men really are the most likely drivers to commit road rage behind the wheel. But first, a campaign for the competition watchdog to investigate the price of fuel now has the backing of 32 MPs. Fair Fuel UK wants the Competition and Markets Authority to look at forecourt prices over concerned diesel customers are being ripped off. The RAC is also urging supermarkets to cut prices. Pete Williams from the Motoring Group says falling wholesale diesel costs should be passed on.
We talk to the supermarkets, we talk to the Petrol Retailers Association, and we have voiced our concern for some weeks now about the savings they were making on the lower price of wholesale diesel, and in urging them to actually pass it on.
Rachel, another CMA investigation?
It's just another case of wholesale prices looking like they haven't been passed on to people. I mean, Lee's been writing about this the last couple of days. We have seen some price reductions on the cost of diesel at supermarkets.
That's right, yeah. But the thing that the RAC is arguing is that throughout the last month, the wholesale price of diesel was less than unleaded. So throughout, it was at least 1 to 3p cheaper. But it tends to be 3 to 4p a litre more expensive at the forecourt. And what they're arguing is there's something like 2.5 billion litres of diesel sold in May compared to 1.5 billion petrol. So businesses tend to use diesel quite a lot, and there's a lot of lorries and et cetera on the road. And a lot of people have bought diesels in the last couple of years, and we've spoken about that quite a bit in the last few months. You know, people were encouraged to buy diesel cars. Now half of cars sold roughly are diesel. So diesel usage has increased. But why is it that diesel's more expensive than unleaded? And again, reader comments on this, always very interesting.
Yeah, what have the readers been saying, Lee?
They can't understand how diesel is more expensive in Britain than unleaded, when across the continent, diesel tends to be cheaper than petrol. So why is that? Well, this is what the CMA is going to have a look into and investigate, because, you know, diesel drivers are, on the whole, getting ripped off.
Well, Sainsbury's, Tesco both cut their prices by 2p post-budget as fuel duty remains frozen. Sainsbury's say it's another great piece of news for our customers, and Tesco say with summer holidays just around the corner, we're helping our customers to get away with their families by dropping the cost of diesel. Smiling along there, Lee.
These supermarket price wars are just, you know, sometimes you can't, it's hard to believe what's going on, because they could be raising prices a week before up by a couple of pence. Not saying they definitely do this. I'm not accusing Sainsbury's or Tesco of doing this, but then they can go, oh yeah, but look, we're chopping 2p off a litre of diesel, petrol, whatever, from now onwards. So the one thing I will say in the defence of supermarkets, however, is that they do always offer cheaper fuel on the whole than, you know, your BPs, your SOs. So AA has a monthly report. It shows you a breakdown of each retailer and how much they charge for diesel and petrol. And Asda is always bottom. So they always say if you've got an Asda in your town or your city, you're quite lucky because it tends to drive down prices around it. Because people go to Asda, they're very fuel conscious. They know how much a litre of petrol costs. It's one of those things when you're a motorist, you tend to kind of vaguely know how much you should be paying for a litre of fuel. So I think this investigation will be good. You talk about fuel duty there being frozen, and it's been frozen for quite a while now, but it doesn't mask the fact that something like 58p is fuel duty, another 20 odd is VAT. I mean, it's making up a large chunk of the price of diesel. And I've seen Quinton Wilson from Fair Fuel UK was saying, you know, it's great, it's been frozen again, but what we really need now is for the duty to start coming down a little bit.
And it all makes a significant amount of difference. If, like Adam, who you've spoken about on your website, what am I talking about? Well, Adam moved home 1,000 yards, but his insurer, car insurer, hiked his policy by an extra £474 a year. Is this right, Lee? What's going on here?
I think this is actually quite scandalous because we're talking about a place called Upper Beeding in Sussex.
It sounds dangerous.
It sounds really dangerous, doesn't it? It sounds like there's carjackings and all sorts going on. I could kind of understand this if you were in London and you were moving from one sort of postcode to another postcode that maybe has, you know, more of a history of vehicle crime. But this investigation, which is done by Ruth on Money Mail, it's absolutely crazy. Like, she had a look into how many reports have been of vehicle crimes in the last year. Seven vehicle crimes.
It's as a result, though, isn't it, of car insurance firms using this new mapping technique to decide on your risk. So Adam is 30, moved out of his home with his parents, moved just down the road, and he's being forced to pay an extra £500, essentially.
Well, I'm sure he can go and shop around and find something that's, you know, going to be better value for money. But why should you? I mean, you know, it's this insurer, you've used this insurer, it's been fine. And it's very much this sort of computer says no mentality of firm sometimes. Just do the sensible thing. You know, surely it would be a system for them to alert, go, well, wait a minute, why has his insurance gone up by that much? Should we be sending this renewal letter out? Should we be saying this is how much it's going to cost you? They just start getting more customer experience and sort of,
Do we know, though, that's the exact reason? Because exactly how insurance decide on what premiums to charge is, and you've said it here, a closely guarded secret and has come under a bit of scrutiny recently. And I'm wondering if it's because he's moved out of his parental home and he's a 30-year-old bloke.
It's one of the most mysterious things, actuaries and insurers and how they work out the cost of different risks. We've done lots of stories over the years about tiny little tweaks that you can make to your insurance application, and it will vary your premiums considerably. So, I mean, from my point of view, if I wrote editor instead of reporter, it would change the type of premium that I would get. Mm-hmm. It's here, I mean, my favourite line in this, she's worked out that it cost 50p for every step away from her old home to his new one. It's these tiny little things that make all the difference. And it's just totally, as Lee says, it's computers who are evaluating risks and have sort of numbers around these different things.
And it was also made famous as well, actress Sheila Hancock saying her car insurance rose from £873 to £2,246 a year without warning. The 82-year-old had driven for 63 years without making a single claim on her insurance. But we're going to be sticking with cars for a minute, and this next bit of news could leave men in the mould of Victor Meldrew exclaiming this. Yes, it turns out grumpy 69-year-old men really are the most likely drivers to commit road rage. It's according to a new study which shows that the picturesque cathedral city of Lincoln is in fact the road rage capital of Britain. So, you never know, Lee. Something may sound very calm and peaceful, but it could be a hotbed of road rage. So how angry are the people of Lincoln?
Well, according to this report, very angry. I mean, there is, you know, a lot of road rage that seems to be going on there. Apparently, average driver loses their call every 20 minutes or 7 miles driven, which seems quite high to me. I don't know. Does it seem high to you? I'm not sure. But
when they say losing your cool, though, how have they defined this?
It's gesticulating.
Right.
Shouting, swearing.
Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised you can go 7 miles in 20 minutes in Lincoln. Yeah. You certainly can't down the road in London.
Well, London actually was 13th in the list. I would have expected it to be far higher, especially when you're getting cut up by buses or you've got cyclists that are just sort of like willy-nilly just sort of cut in front of you. I mean, I drive in London sometimes and...
Do you gesticulate wildly?
No, I'm a temple of calm. I put on Classic FM and I...
Share radio, obviously.
Yeah, share radio. But looking at this list of what the most common road rage triggers are, another driver cutting you up is top. People are indicating second. But I actually think the most irritating one out of the eight listed here is definitely another driver pushing into a queue. And I saw loads of that yesterday during the tube strike. There seems to be lots of taxi drivers that were just cutting up buses. They've got one passenger. Bus has got loads. We want to get, and it's absolutely crazy. But
you're not in the car now, Lee. It's all right. Calm down.
It's no rage here. It's just temple of calm. Temple of calm.
It is.
It's fine.
It's studio rage. None of that, thank you. And the politest cities I go to, Rachel, because you're so polite.
Nottingham.
Nottingham.
Glasgow, Oxford, Cardiff, Edinburgh.
Seems the Scots and the Welsh are a lot more calm. And a lot
Who
nicer.
Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it, indeed? A journalist, Rachel Wickard-Strauss, Lee Boyce from This Is Money, the award-winning finance section of The Mail Online. Thank you so much for joining us. Share Radio.